This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The head of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce says sometimes conversations about economic development aren't conducted in the most thoughtful way.
We are somewhat guilty at times of our risk aversity and our complacency. We also at times tend to shoot from the hip and take whatever hot project might be of today. But does it fit that long-term vision to make sure that it financially is viable and feasible for where we want our community to go?
GLT's Colleen Reynolds talks with Charlie Moore about the good example set by Conway, Arkansas in economic development and about the multi-sports complex proposal. Plus, District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley is excited about the artificial surface coming for the football field, and John Norton has a live interview with singer Wayne Mesmer. That and a GLT news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Wayne Mesmer is an iconic voice in Illinois, serving as a professional speaker, broadcaster, actor, author, and, of course, singer. He's also an Illinois Wesleyan University graduate. Mesmer joins us in studio for an interview with GLT's John Norton.
Wayne Mesmer, great to have you in the studio.
I thank you, John. It's fabulous to be in the luxurious studios of WGLT. Hey, man, there's nothing better than coming back to a spot where you just sit down and you can get things done. People are so hung up, I think, on fanciness. We sit down here today in a studio that reminds me of a few years back when I was kicking around and going down to Decatur to do a newscast on a weekend while I was a student at Wesleyan.
Oh, really? I did not know you did
that.
Yeah,
and then in Chicago, kind of kicking and scraping and trying to find something, and they keep telling you no.
Are you saying our studios look a little dated? Is that what you're getting
at? I'm saying it brings back a fabulous memory of saying at a time in my life when I wouldn't take no for an answer.
That's so diplomatic. I love that. Wayne Mesmer is in town this weekend. He is being honored as a 2017 Illinois Wesleyan Distinguished Alumnus. That's quite an honor.
I can't imagine how many thousands of other Wesleyan alums are asking for a recall.
Was it a surprise to you? How did you find out about it?
I get a phone call, say, would you be open to accepting this? And I thought, I said, okay, it must be a mistake. And then I thought about it. I would leap at the opportunity as a professional speaker and singer and broadcaster and all those fun things to be able to come out here back to town and be able to do a little bit of all of those things in one weekend is wonderful. I'm doing a thing this afternoon over on campus at Wesleyan at 2 o'clock doing the business of music.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that in just a minute as well. Was it 1968? You decided you're going to Illinois Wesleyan University.
It was about 1970. I came down as a transfer student.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
But, why did you come to Wesleyan? What drew you to the Titan School?
Honestly?
Yeah.
The viola.
Yeah?
Yeah. And the girlfriend who played it.
Which order goes first, the girlfriend or the viola?
She just happened to play viola.
Okay.
But she was going to Wesleyan.
So and, she plays the viola or you played the viola?
She did. So that was my lure to the university. I tell you, I am so fortunate to have fallen into this Wesleyan bed of roses. The distinguished alums of Wesleyan, I think, is a lengthy list. Wonderful, wonderful people. I'm just happy I could carry the flag, that I made a little something out of myself, and very proud to talk about coming back and struggles that I had, and we're going to share some of that with students tomorrow morning in the library over at Wesleyan. I will give a talk that I call From Wesley into the World Series.
Well, even coming back to campus for any reason from out of town can cause someone to reflect, right?
Oh, no doubt.
An honor like this probably really causes you to reflect. This is a body of work you're being honored for. What are you reflecting on as you come to campus this weekend?
I stood right about at the exact spot where my life was truly changed. One of the professors grabbed me by the shoulder and specifically said, you're fooling a lot of people, but you're not fooling me. Meaning, do you want to do something with this gift that you have of your voice? Or do you just want to kind of use natural talent and fake it till you make it or you don't? And gave me that encouragement to say, if you want to do something professionally, significantly, you got to build the right foundation. And I had been cruising along and just, you know, I was a French horn player, so nobody expected me to really be able to sing. And the director was Dr. David Knott, who's now passed away, was a director of the collegiate choir there, which I was in. And he said, show up at my studio and we'll start talking.
He's the guy that was telling you.
He was the guy, man. He kind of put that Vulcan death grip on my shoulder. He was a big guy, like 6'6". Showed up at his studio the next morning, and that's when my life began in terms of realizing the God-given gift of the voice. Because on my business card, it says Vox Humana. I do everything I can to use the human voice. Voiceover, broadcasting, narration, singing, motivational speaking, audiobooks. It's all right there.
Are you saying you didn't realize you had that gift, or
no,
you were taking it for granted at the time?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Come on.
Wayne Messmer is the voice you're hearing, a 2017 distinguished alum at Illinois Wesleyan University. He's in town this weekend to receive that honor, and he's doing a number of other things, including singing the national anthem at the football game tomorrow afternoon against Carroll College.
12:30.
I'm John Norton. This is GLT Sound Ideas. Jazz. I want to ask you about jazz. GLT is a jazz station.
Beautiful, man. I'm telling you, I do a Sunday night jazz show.
Yeah.
We did up at a public radio station up in the Chicago area, in the WDCB. And am I able to mention such thing?
Oh, absolutely. In Glen Ellen.
Yeah, in Glen Ellen. And 90.9 if you're close to the stick, but not from down here. And it's cool. It's kind of like Wayne the Dude. You know what I mean? It's the... you're coming into my radio lounge for an hour, and you want to hear some piano music? Man, I might as well have Oscar Peterson play for us, you know? You want to sing? Yeah, let's bring Ella over. Let's do Mel Torme. Let's do Johnny Hartman.
Oh, wow. Know. So that's my question, stuff. Then. What's in your wheelhouse? The Great American Songbook, free jazz? It sounds like you're more leaning toward the Great American
Songbook.
I'm
the songbook guy. I love standards done well. I love female vocalists. One that is going to be on campus with me during this Business of Music piece that we're doing at Wesleyan. And she is a Milliken grad and a tremendous singer from Chicago.
What's her name?
Angel Specia. And she's marvelous. And so she'll be part of this thing. And we're going to show a lot of different styles of music. It's kind of how to turn a personality and disorder into a career, you know. With I Have One Medley, it will be 8 completely different styles of music that I'll be singing. So it'd be fun, you know?
Well, I hinted earlier when you were talking about a panel you're on this afternoon, you've got a music education degree from Illinois Wesleyan, your undergraduate in psychology, right, for your master's and PhD?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're on a panel for the music business this afternoon. What are you talking about? What's your angle?
Our angle is to try and be real and relevant, and we have 3 professional peeps who have done it for a long while. We're not going to break any hearts, but we'll try and be honest, talk about what it takes about keeping your ears open, and what does a leader expect when you show up on a gig. Talk about gigs, talk about money, talk about versatility, and improvisation, reading, not reading. You know, if you want to be a pianist and you want to do a gig, you better know the standard tunes, and you better know them in more than one key. That kind of stuff.
Music business has always been a tough business. It's even tougher now, isn't it?
Well, it's horrible. You know, the crazy thing about it is the fact that back in when I was here, for example, my Ron Bedell, who is the third person of the trio of the music business piece, and I were here. He was my pledge son, and we played a gig here for a long while in Bloomington, the duo of Ron and Wayne. And it was a real rough around the edges, you know. I played drums, which I don't play. He played organ in a bar, the Fond du Lac Club, it was called. I don't know if anybody even remembers this place. But the organ that was kind of like the keys were from all of the nicotine. They were brown and black, you know.
Where was the Fond du Lac?
Do you remember? Man, it was downtown, right on the edge of downtown.
Normal or Bloomington?
It was in Bloomington.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta see if we can find that.
Sorry to interrupt you. I've never heard of that club.
The musical stylings of Ron and Wayne. So we'll be you know, the band is back together.
Cool.
Today for that.
Very cool. Wayne Messmer is our guest on GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. He's in town to accept the 2017 Distinguished Alumnus Award this weekend, and wow, that's pretty cool. That's really cool. You're a versatile guy. This is a body of work you're being honored for, and I don't have enough pages for all things that you do in your life. You're SAG-AFTRA. That's the Actors Union. It looks like one of the latest things that you're up to is a one-man play or one-man show. It's called Damien.
Damien is
about a priest.
I didn't write it. Yeah, it's about a
you did or didn't write it?
No, I did not write it. It was written by Aldith Morris in 1977. It's about a Belgian priest who went to the island of Molokai in Hawaii. And there he lived and worked and ministered and ultimately died among that group of the lepers. And it's powerful. It's one man and show. It's me for 90 minutes in cassock and collar and telling the stories as Damien.
Is it music too?
No music. Okay. You know, it's like, you could make a joke about what song. You need Mel Brooks to write music for
an island of lepers.
And it was actually a peninsula, to be specific about it.
What drew you to do this show?
The character of Father Damien.
What was he like?
He was tough. He was a guy who didn't mind standing up and battling with the bishops or the Board of Health, and being a tremendous advocate for those who otherwise would have no voice whatsoever. I like that. To pretend to be that guy for 90 minutes is tremendously humbling.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton, and Wayne Messmer is in the studio. We're excited to have you in here. You're the guy that a lot of people know as a national anthem guy. You've sung so many times for Chicago Cubs games. You sang for Chicago Blackhawks games for years, the Chicago Wolves now. You sang this week at Wrigley Field, isn't it?
Yeah, just the other day.
Yeah. Were you the good luck charm?
I was not a good luck charm. That game we lost 5-0. So never take credit for a win, because otherise they will blame you for the loss.
Okay. When was the first time you sang the national anthem? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was in Franklin Park. I was in graduate school at Loyola and would kind of scrimmage with the hockey team and have some fun. And I said, you need an announcer to do this. I would go to the games. You know, Loyola goal scored by number. And I would do that and just have some fun and play a cassette recording. I don't know if you kids know what that is. Cassette recording, and it busted one day. It was Kate Smith, and it just, you know, kind of died out. I said, I'll sing it. I'll just sing it. Okay. So I go, who'll sing? And I tore loose, and all the guys are going, what is that? I said, well, yeah, I can sing. Well, okay, do it again. So I did it. That exposure somehow at a radio station was carrying the Chicago Sting soccer games, and I kind of weaseled my way into an invitation to come out and sing. They said, do it again. Yeah, okay, do it again. Okay, do it again. Pay me, and I will. You know, and then that turned into something. And then I was the announcer who introduced myself for a number of years, a number of situations, being the stadium announcer and the singer. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please join me, Wayne Messmer. And it was kind of weird at first. But then I knew my name would be pronounced properly too. But it was cool. Now, White Sox for 3 years, and then 33 years now with the Cubs.
You have sung this so many times. Is it hundreds? Is it thousands?
I'm closing in on 5,000.
5,000. Okay. Yeah. I want to play one particular one, and you'll know it, from 1991, the NHA All-Star Game. It was at Chicago Stadium back in the day. I want to play just a little bit of that. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
Let's see if we can play this here. That was right after the Gulf War started in 1991.
A day and a half after it had begun. And yeah. we were
It was
afraid.
Electric in there.
We were afraid. That was the most legitimate spontaneity that I've ever seen. That lit a tremendous fire of patriotism at that moment, and it was both the Canadian and the United States national anthems. And they still make noise during the anthem at Blackhawks games, and it was born a few years before that, in about 1985, all in Chicago Stadium. Noise for noise's sake bothers me, and I'm often asked about that.
Yeah.
Like a preseason game, if you're standing there screaming, no, you're missing the point. That was a moment where what you are gifted to do and what you are requested to do meet in the same intersection. That's magical. That's a moment. And I knew it needed to be done right. That recording and the video of that opened and closed every local Chicago and every national newscast that night.
Wow.
So you can imagine, I'm standing in my home, with the clicker in my hand, as those fellas naturally do, instinctively, flipping the channels, going, wow, man, that was a cool day. It was really a cool day.
And you're singing tomorrow afternoon at the homecoming game in Tucci Stadium.
It'll be my best performance ever. People say, what's your favorite? My next one.
Have you ever sung at Wesleyan?
Oh, yeah.
The National Anthem?
Yeah, a couple times.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be special, though. This is your 2017 Distinguished Alumnus Performance.
I'm deciding whether to add some choreography, perhaps a lovely new outfit. I'm not quite sure, but it's going to be great. This is so flattering. To have what's happening for me this weekend, I'm overwhelmed. I love having gone to Illinois Wesleyan. I tremendously embrace ISU as part of a magnificent community of Bloomington Normal that I just think highly of.
Wayne Messmer, thank you for joining us in the studio. Welcome back to Bloomington for the big honor. It's nice to meet you and talk to you face-to-face. We're live on the air right now in the GLT studios.
How cool is that?
It's very cool.
All right, man. Group hug. Here we go.
I'm John Norton.
And you're listening to the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, in which Wayne Messmer once sang, This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping individuals and families create solid plans for the future through a combination of investment options and life insurance. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, a conversation with District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley. It's been 6 months since anyone has talked publicly about a proposal for a $16 million multi-sport complex developer Dave Stark has been targeting for 200 acres at College and White Oak Road. At the time, consultant Katie Kemp thought she might be headed to public officials with tentative plans for feedback in April. McLean County Chamber of Commerce Director Charlie Moore tells GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds of sports investments by communities in Arkansas, where he thinks the Twin Cities project stands.
You know, there is a lot of discussion that's going on about this particular project. And, quite frankly, I'm most thankful for that. An opportunity for a community to get together and discuss any idea that we think can help move us forward into a direction, whether it's a direction that you agree with or that you don't. Any idea is well worth the opportunity to vet, to take a look at how we continue to stay relevant as a community, how we continue to economically diversify ourselves, and how we compete with communities similar to Bloomington Normal across not only the state of Illinois, but across the United States. And so I think when you start talking about the West Side Sports Complex, multi-sports complex, and looking at all the unique niches that it could potentially fill based on the conversations that I've heard, that it's well worth the conversation to be had to determine how does this public-private opportunity come together to serve our community, to serve the kids and the families and the sporting organizations of Bloomington Normal and McLean County, but how do we also look at it as a revenue stream? And I think that that's got to be a part of the conversation that we have going forward. Community is not only in our in Bloomington Normal and across the state of Illinois, but across the nation, are all suffering significant declines in sales tax revenue. And for a very long time, that's been the premise for funding municipal operations. So as a community, there are certain ways in which, or lifestyles in which we're accustomed to living, and certain benefits that we receive and certain opportunities that we have here that you might not have in other locations. And so while we take some of that for granted, we also have to take a look at how do we find that long-term revenue stream that comes to Bloomington Normal? Is it the sports complex? Is that the answer? That I can't tell you. But I can tell you it's worth a conversation to take a look at where you find new revenue streams that aren't continually taxing the residents here or the businesses here, and finding ways that we can bring in outside money from across the state and across the country to come to Bloomington Normal, where they will spend dollars at hotels and at restaurants and at gas stations and in retail outlets while they're here. I think it's important to take a look at where is it that we can find those dollars, and how can we have them not only bring their dollars to Bloomington Normal, but how are we giving them a community in which they want to spend it in? So it makes a great tie into not only a multi-sport complex, but also from a quality of place perspective, what do we have to offer that will attract and lure those conferences and sports organizations to come to Bloomington Normal to play their tournaments here.
That spin-off revenue that we talk about, that $10 million a year, let's say, estimated in a study from a couple of years ago, does come with its own cost, though. You have that upfront capital investment that must be made. What kind of appetite do you think this community has at this time for that kind of investment? And I'm going to put it in the perspective of the recent news about the Coliseum and mismanagement and City of Bloomington dealing with a ticking time bomb sewer system and a street system that needs $80 million in improvements in the next decade.
The question I would ask in response is, why do we in Bloomington Normal why do we find it contingent upon ourselves to continually find reasons to throw stones at each other or to shoot down ideas before they've been properly vetted? And again, not coming in as an advocate and a diehard for any particular project, but I think that we are notorious for having been so successful for so long as a community that we are two things. We are complacent, and we are somewhat risk-averse. Now, there are some people who would challenge the risk-aversity based on some of the projects that have happened over the last 10 years. But I think that the bigger challenge comes from, as a community, I'm a firm believer you will not and cannot tax your way to prosperity, but you also cannot cut your way to prosperity. So as a vision for what we want Bloomington Normal to be, for the people who were here 25 years ago, to us today, to those of us like myself who have young children and hope they're here in 25 years, what's that evolution of our community look like? You know, I come from a very small family farm, and my dad and my grandpa used to say years ago, you have to spend money to make money. And I used to fight that tooth and nail. But I, to an extent, agree with, if we know what we want this community to look like, if we know what the vision is for Bloomington Normal, if we embrace the fact that we are a university community, if we take a look at our central location with three interstates, a fantastic airport close to the river with rail service, not only passenger, but also to move commodity. We have so many reasons why we are a fantastic community with potential to really let our opportunity thrive and be on the map as a visionary for our next generation in 25 years to come. Is there an appetite to spend now? There's never an appetite to spend. And we find that on a routine basis, that it's easy to pick on each other rather than to applaud those who are trying to make positive movement. As a Chamber of Commerce and the almost 1,100 businesses that we have as a member of our organization, as partners of our organization, what are we willing to do to put partisanship to the side, to take a look at every idea that presents itself, to thoroughly vet it? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it fiscally responsible? Does it spur private sector investment? Will it bring future development that's in line with our vision? And if it does those things, then what's our next steps? If it doesn't do those things, then how do we move it to the parking lot, or how do we determine when it's time to pull the plug and call that idea dead and move on to the next?
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Colleen Reynolds, talking with Charlie Moore, who is the director of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce. Do you have any thoughts, even in concept, about the need and the benefits of a multi-sport complex in general?
So using that as the example, you know, I think that tourism is a prime way for a community to take a look at ways in which to diversify its revenue stream, to showcase the products and services that it offers, to showcase the businesses in which that are located and have invested there, and provide new and relevant experiences and opportunities for the residents of that community. So to demonstrate that, one of the things that we'll be doing here in the next few weeks is, for the first time, taking an inner city visit down to a few different communities in Arkansas. And, you know, why Arkansas? I get asked a lot. And really, there's a couple of reasons. First off, it's not in a surrounding state. So a lot of times, Illinois gets compared as an island to Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri. And so this is one state away from being a surrounding state to Illinois and the island of all the policy issues that we find ourselves in. But moreover, is taking a look at what these communities who are similar in size and scope to Bloomington and to Normal have done over the last 3 to 5 years to really utilize quality of place as an economic driver, how they've embraced their universities as developing a pipeline of talent for their employers that are there, how they've embraced their universities to make sure that we're looking at diversity and inclusion when building and rebranding their community and taking a look at how they move forward. And moreover, you know, how they have, in the last 5 years, had over $500 million of private sector investment into retail development, into additional health care, into air services, and things that are all very relevant in daily conversation to folks that are looking to drive the Bloomington Normal economy. So I think that, you know, looking at Conway, Arkansas, and Little Rock, Arkansas, they have, in the last 5 years, also invested significantly into some different sports complexes that are not in one campus. They're in different components of their community. But very timely for us to ask questions as to, how did you fund those? How do you utilize them? How are they marketed? Where are you bringing people in from? What kind of economic impact are you seeing? What's the spur and the spinoff development, which I think is the rest of the conversation, is once you have these, what other private sector investment does it attract? Intentionally so, not just shooting from the hip with a hope and a prayer that there'll be spinoff investment, but how, through the vision of this product or anything that we're working on, do we have a very clear path as to what we're looking to attract and what we're looking to develop? Do those or do those not call for incentives? What is it that we do to move forward? And I think that using Conway and Little Rock is our first example, and there are multiple other communities we'd like to visit. This just happens to be the first, and I have a good relationship with the Chamber CEOs from both of those locations who are welcoming the 25 folks that we'll be taking from Bloomington Normal down there here in a couple of weeks to really have very candid conversation about what they've done, not only in quality of life in place through tourism and the development of sports complexes, but looking at a number of other initiatives such as pipeline development and talent pipeline and workforce development, entrepreneurship, downtown revitalization, and a number of things that are very much in line with the strategy that was created 2 years ago that we refer to as the BN Advantage.
Who's paying for those 25 folks?
So, as you may or may not recall, back in June, we hosted an event out at Mitsubishi, the old Mitsubishi, now Rivian, where we wanted to bring the community together to talk about the successes of what the community has had outside of what you might read in a headline or hear over the radio. But what are the things that we really need to lift up and make sure that people are aware of the good things that are happening despite some of the negative publicity or the negative rhetoric or even just the personal agendas that get in the way of the really good things that are happening. And when we held that event, we were thrilled to have over 600 people participate. So with the revenue that we raised from that particular event, we're taking this trip. And there's a little bit of money that each person will have to pay independently to go to cover some of their ancillary costs. But for the most part, we raised the money from this event to do things like this. So we can look at what communities are doing in other places, who else is doing what, and how are they doing it successfully. And another chamber tagline is to go for R&D. So how do we rip off and duplicate what other communities are doing well that fit in the vision, and I say the word vision a lot, what fits in the vision of what we want Bloomington Normal to look like, not in the next 5 years specific, but in the next 25 years. We are somewhat guilty at times of our risk aversity and our complacency. We also at times tend to shoot from the hip and take whatever hot project might be of today. But does it fit that long-term vision to make sure that it financially is viable and feasible for where we want our community to go, that we're providing a good and service or a product that our community needs, and it makes us unique and it makes us competitive. Right now, as we move forward, 70% of our student population at Illinois State University come from the Chicagoland market. When we're trying to attract new employees to businesses here, two of the biggest challenges we have are the weather environment and the political environment. They're coming to us from the Chicagoland market with an understanding of both. So how do we intentionally integrate those students into the community, build curriculum to the employer's needs, make sure that we have mentorships, internships, externships, all available, so that when they graduate, we have the opportunity to set the hook and show them that there is a pathway of employment and or prosperity in Bloomington Normal. But while we're doing that at Illinois State, that we're also looking at it at K-12 and looking at the secondary levels to make sure that the career and technical skilled opportunities are also there and we've got a pathway as well. So again, a long-winded answer to your very short question, but I think we have to have the vision. And before we have that vision and an agreement on that vision, we'll have those tough conversations about, are we financially ready to move forward in any one particular project or any certain direction?
Do you think sports tourism is a good option for Bloomington Normal to diversify its economy, especially when we, you know, are seeing even some of the bedrocks of our economy, the insurance industry, with some significant cuts occurring?
So the chamber does not have a position on this topic at this point in time, so I'm giving you a Charlie Moore-ism. And my one-word answer is absolutely. I take a look at, from a personal perspective, what we can spend on any given weekend when you travel out of town for a sports opportunity for your children. Right now, when you take a look at, you know, sales tax generation or revenue generation from retail, one of the things that we're challenged with, a lot of communities have started to adopt years ago, is the opportunity for multiple experiences in one location. People base a lot of their shopping habits, if they're going out, on the experience they receive while they're there. So you don't experience anything online except for knowing that you got purchased whatever you're looking to purchase. But there's no addition that comes to it. But if you have that opportunity for us to look at, where do the 8 to 80 year olds integrate? How do we intermingle our society, our community, to have that bond? Where is it that you can go in multiple things, from eating a meal to buying a product to servicing opportunities to movies to whatever it might be? Where do you have that one-stop shop opportunity in Bloomington Normal? And the short answer is you don't. That puts us at a competitive disadvantage. So those are the types of things. In sports tourism, do we have that opportunity? Absolutely, I think, as a Charlie Moore perception, we do. We just want to make sure that we meet that opportunity head on, that we're giving these people, when they come to Bloomington Normal, other ways to engage with us. But the side benefit to that is what we're doing for those who are already invested here with their families and with their businesses.
That brings up the Downtown Bloomington Task Force, which is looking at taking library expansion to a new location where the Monroe Street parking garage currently is, replacing it with expanded library, combination with a Connect Transit Center, and making that an anchor project, which would then bring other private investment. Is the chamber going to take a position on that?
I think the chamber at some point may have some comments to add about that. It's duly a part of what our board is going through right now, which is an environmental scan and taking a look at what is happening not only in downtown, but throughout Bloomington Normal and all of McLean County. And how do we take the results of that environmental scan and scrub it with our strategic plan to determine if there's a course correction that's needed in the work that we're doing? You know, to the point I made earlier and to the question that you asked, I think that is there a project like a library or a transit center that goes into the downtown? But again, from Charlie Moore's perspective and not necessarily our board of directors, and the chamber in specific, is how does that project fit into the long-term vision of downtown Bloomington? How does that inspire and intentionally create attraction for private sector investment that we know what we're looking for in each potential corridor? And it's been talked about breaking downtown into different corridors, which I think is smart. You think of New York City and you've got SoHo and Little Italy, and downtown Bloomington is a very big contiguous blocked area. And so you can't look at doing all of downtown. I think that's just naive to think that it's all one particular topic. But when you break it down into segments, and what does the city of Bloomington, what does the task force, and what do the residents want to see in each one of those areas? And how are we intentional from a visionary standpoint to take a look at what will intentionally attract private sector investment and how are we doing that strategically, knowing that it's in line with the larger plan, whether it's to bring it on Bloomington comprehensive plan, whether it's a downtown plan that's somewhat dated and needs to be brought back, I think, up to today for another conversation. But ultimately, it's in order for someone to feel comfortable and confident in investing significant private sector dollars, they need to be well aware and understand what that vision looks like. And I think a schematic of said vision would be super helpful for anyone to take a look at. How do we envision what this downtown looks like? Because when you can see it, you know whether A, we want to buy into it, or B, it really fits into the long-term plan.
GLT's Colleen Reynolds talked with Chamber of Commerce Director Charlie Moore.
Support for GLT comes from Jack Baytall Real Estate Group and Keller Williams. Jack and his team are committed to helping Bloomington Normal continue to thrive by giving back to GLT and other local nonprofits. Current listings at jacksguarantee.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
We asked and you called.
Hey GLT, it's your number one fan.
We asked you to call and tell us why you contribute. Now it's time to join these listeners by giving at WGLT.org.
I listen to WGLT because it has information about music and art.
I love the Sound Ideas podcast. Being able to listen to interviews with local leaders whenever I feel like it is great.
This public radio station runs on listener dollars. Join these listeners. Make a contribution at WGLT.org.
Okay, bye.
This fund drive ends Monday. You're running out of time to help pay for the GLT and NPR programs you rely on. Don't wait a minute longer. Renew your annual support or make that first-time contribution. Every contribution gets us closer to meeting the goal and keeping GLT strong. Get it done now at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Illinois Wesleyan University has a new sports coach, but it's not the kind of sports you're thinking of. Callum Fletcher is the new head coach of Wesleyan's eSports program, a form of competitive online gaming. GLT's student reporter Dania De La Hoya visited Wesleyan's recent eSports tryout. She talked to Fletcher about the growth of eSports and how he plans on building Wesleyan's new program up.
eSports is simply competitive video games. It started in early 2000s. I mean, it can be traced back even further than that with your first Space Invaders tournament. But it truly kind of took its roots with QuakeCon, and which is a first-person shooter. And then games, tournament organizers like Major League Gaming came into play and World Cyber Games. And it kind of took off in the early 2000s. And then in the late 2000s, it kind of started skyrocketing and you started seeing bigger sponsorship deals, bigger prize tournaments. And it's kind of just gradually evolved into this behemoth that is a huge player in the entertainment industry, and it's only getting bigger, as you're seeing now with the collegiate esports scene growing, which really has only been around for about 2 years now. So at its core, it's competitive video games.
And how did you find out about Illinois Wesleyan's new program?
Sure. I was actually just looking for a new opportunity, and I came across it online, and it's one of those things where you kind of see it and you're saying, oh my God, that's perfect for me. I have a background in event management, community management, and then I personally have been a competitor. I've ran tournaments. I've helped manage large-scale events that revolve around gaming. So I've kind of got this smorgasbord of opportunities that I've had in the past that have all kind of funneled into making this a perfect opportunity for me. Jumped on it the second I saw it, and I was fortunate enough to secure the role. I studied law enforcement and homeland security in university, and I've always been passionate about gaming, and kind of growing up, when I was going to school, there was no video game business. I mean, you had your typical level design and multiplayer leads and stuff like that for video game studios, but there was really no path that you followed to get into esports and stay in esports. So I took it upon myself to create opportunities. So I would volunteer at events. I mean, I flew myself out to Toronto and put myself up to help run an event that didn't pay or anything, but it was just a good resume builder. It's those things like that is why I love esports, because anybody who is passionate about it, who's dedicated to it, who loves it, can do anything with it. They just have to go out and do it.
And so how did you go from graduating with a degree in law enforcement to having a career based on video games?
Yeah, so I was a intern. I got it, my first job out of university, I was an intern at an arcade studio in the Chicago suburbs. Basically came in and they said, tell us what you want to do, and if we like you, we'll bring you on full time. I spent the next few months kind of building out proposals and plans and projects, and fortunately was lucky enough that they liked what I said and brought me on full time. And then over the next 2.5 years, I went and did everything from helping set up and organize the Big Buck World Championship to working with Twitch over at TwitchCon and doing all these really cool events. And I literally just soaked in everything I could. And after 2.5 years, I said, okay, I'm ready for that next step. And I've always wanted to get back into more mainstream games. Arcade was never really my first love. It wasn't where I wanted to spend my life in a career. So I always had the idea of, okay, the next job is back into mainstream. It's going to be something that I really, really want to do. And this is exactly that.
And so what got you into esports in the first place? Can you trace it back to a certain time, a certain age or anything?
Yeah, I can actually. Back in the glory days, this must have been, I don't even know how long ago, but I used to play Halo 1 at my buddy's house, and this was back when you would have to, instead of Xbox Live, you would tether all of the Xboxes together, and we would all be in separate rooms of the house, and we'd have 8 to 16 people over there, all shouting at each other from different rooms, and that was my first taste of competitive video games. Then in 2008, I had the opportunity to go to New Jersey and play in a tournament with some friends, and we got destroyed. We got absolutely whooped. But the weekend, I mean, I was probably 14 or 15 at the time. That weekend was kind of just this catalyst that made me go, this is where I belong. This is what I want to do. So I went home and I practiced and I got as good as I could and kept on competing. And it evolved from being a competitor to, okay, I don't really have time to compete and practice anymore, so I'm going to get into the administrative side of things. And then here I am today.
So what will you be doing as head coach of the program here?
Yeah, so my biggest responsibility is recruiting the team for next year. The program is being built up from scratch, so we don't currently have a varsity-level team that starts in 2019. 2018. My biggest responsibility will be recruiting. The second is we're actually building an esports arena on campus, a state-of-the-art facility that students, faculty, and outsiders alike can all come and kind of congregate around something that they're passionate about, which is games. And then also, I think one of the biggest responsibilities is building this esports community on campus that everyone can come. We have a really diverse student population at Illinois Wesleyan, so the fact that students can come from China or Europe or anywhere in the United States and come to Illinois Wesleyan and instantly have people that they're passionate or people that they share the same passions with, it naturally creates connections, which I think is incredibly important when you're going away to school, especially some people as far as Europe and China.
And how many other colleges and universities are doing esports?
There are approximately 40 collegiate varsity level programs currently. So it's still incredibly young. There are about just over 100 TESPA chapters. And then there are, I heard a number around 600 clubs throughout the United States. So it really depends on what level you're trying to understand, but it can be anywhere from 600 to 40. But it's growing. I mean, it's growing fast. I'll be astonished that if by the end of the next year there's not 75 to 100 varsity programs throughout the United States. And then the following year will be in the hundreds. And at some point, it will get to the point where most universities have an esports team.
So what kind of games do you guys play here then?
Sure. So Illinois Wesleyan is focusing exclusively on League of Legends currently. There are other collegiate titles such as Overwatch, Rocket League, Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, Super Smash Bros. So it kind of varies, but as of now, we're just focusing on League of Legends. Personally, I would love to see us expand into other games in the future, but that will all ultimately depend on the success of the program.
And what is League of Legends for those who don't know?
Yeah, so League of Legends is a 5v5 online battle arena. So essentially, a player will go in with a team of five, and they will choose a champion, and the objective is to destroy the other team's base before they destroy yours. It's a lot more complex than that. I've been playing for about 6 years, and there's still things that I'm kind of picking up and going, what? I didn't know that. And fortunately, that's my role as the coach, is to make sure that my players do know that. Fortunately, I think I'm an excellent candidate for the job. Obviously, the school did too. But yeah, it's a battle arena. It's intense. The games can last anywhere from 15 to an hour.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm Danya De La Hoya. Today, we're meeting the new head coach of Illinois Wesleyan's esports program, Callum Fletcher. I visited Wesleyan last week for esports tryouts. One of the students who showed up was senior computer science major Drew Litherland. He's never played competitive League of Legends before, but he was still excited.
I've always liked video games on a very technical level, and you can definitely see those technical quirks of the game shine through whenever there's really high level competitive play. People are gonna try to push these video games to the limit, and try to beat the other guy by any means. And so you see a lot of cheap stuff, but it's still really interesting to me, just what people come up with and how these meta games evolve. And yeah, and I really like that.
Do you have to be super experienced to join these things on campus, or what's the experience level here?
I would say if you have a prior interest in a game and you played it a lot in your spare time, then it wouldn't be too hard to adapt to a more competitive environment. But if you're completely new, it could be really an intimidating experience, because these players put so much time into it, and they're just so much better. And it seems like, man, I don't, like, a lot of times people be like, oh, I don't think I'll ever get that good, and for me, I'm a very new League of Legends player. So if I see somebody who's been playing 7 years and I'm just starting out, and he's got a really high rank, and he's being really fast on the keyboard, it seems like, oh, I'm so far behind. I doubt I catch up in any reasonable amount of time. But it's still fun. With Smash Bros, I'm kind of the same way. But just through hard work, you can keep up with the really good people. So.
So how long have you been playing?
League or Smash?
Both.
Well, I've been playing Smash Bros since I was a kid, technically, but I didn't get into it very competitively until about 3 years ago, when I saw online that there was a huge scene for it and there was a lot of resources. For League of Legends, I started playing I was really late to the party. I started playing it this summer, in May, just because my friends were playing it over the summer, and they'd always be in the Discord chats, talking to each other, and I just kind of didn't want to be left out, so.
I asked Fletcher how the competitions work, especially at the varsity level, where he hopes to take Wesleyan's esports program.
Yeah, so the beauty of esports is it can be typically done electronically and online, so we don't have to travel around for tournaments often. So typically, leagues will run a standard league. You play everyone, and then the best seeds will move into a playoffs, and then after playoffs, the top two teams will play in the championship. Similar to everything from March Madness to a standard league for a soccer team or a football team or anything like that. It's really no different. It's just we're replacing the physical sport aspect of it to a video game esport. There's a couple leagues that we're looking at competing in over the next year or two. We'll see where our team ends up this semester and next semester.
So you're the first ever head coach of the esports program here. So where do you hope to take the program during your time here? And what do you hope to see come of the esports program?
Yeah, I really, really, really would love to see this program succeed. And to me, succeeding is expanding into other titles, having teams in every single game, having a community on campus that is attractive to students all over the world. Don't even need to be our competitive players, but they're still interested in coming on campus and being a part of the community. I don't think there's an end goal. There is no end goal with esports, because it is growing. It's constantly growing, and there's no, okay, we're going to have this, and then we're going to stop. The goal is always to get bigger and better, and to me, that means inclusivity. It means diversity. It means growing in numbers consistently, and it's a safe place for our students to come and have connections with people and be a part of something bigger than them.
That's Callum Fletcher, the new head coach of Illinois Wesleyan's esports program, speaking with GLT student reporter Danya De La Hoya. Fletcher is also part of a committee at Wesleyan spearheading the creation of an esports arena on the second floor of the Hanson Student Center. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. District 87 has chosen a St. Louis area firm to install artificial turf to make the football field at BHS into a multi-purpose facility. Superintendent Barry Riley says the bid from Byrne and Jones Construction was just under $800,000.
The lowest responsible bidder came in about $230,000 to $240,000 less than we had allocated for that. So we're happy about that. In the bid specs, one of the things that we wanted to make sure we did was get a company who is experienced in this. And we did. We've got a company that's done a number of fields, not just here around the area, but nationally. We're happy with that. We're excited. And they've indicated that they expect that they will finish by March 15th, which if that does occur, and we're fortunate enough to have that happen, then that will allow our girls soccer team to be the first team to utilize it for contests. But that will also mean that it will not disrupt the track season. And our track teams, obviously, they use that area for movement as events are going on. And that was good news. We had a lot of interest. We had about 8 companies initially that came to a pre-bid session expressing interest and bidding on the project. In the end, we only had 3 bidders.
Were the bids grouped appropriately when there were no real outliers?
No, there weren't really. They ranged from ultimately the winning bid to about $130,000 between them. So no, there wasn't a big spread, which indicates that there was a good interest in competition and really getting what I would observe as the market here in Central Illinois, at least for high schools, if there is a market.
Intermittent, I would think.
Yeah. We've got, of course, Wesleyan. We've got ISU that have artificial turfs on their fields, and they get a lot of use. And I would expect the same for us. Now, in our case, it's a little bit different than most high schools around us because we do not have a ton of green space for practices and other activities. And so all along in the time that I've been in District 87, I spent a number of years at the high school. I was a coach. I was an assistant to John Zabel as the athletic director. We had a need for a surface that allowed us to put multiple events on it, and it's very difficult to do on a natural surface.
Superintendent Barry Riley of District 87, thanks to John Norton, to Danya De La Hoya, and to Colleen Reynolds for today's show. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Sound Ideas returns Monday. This is WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org.